When a national energy policy was presented to the Congress and to the people, I said that because of the importance of it, that this was a moral equivalent of war. I haven't changed my mind. In fact, the seriousness of the energy crisis is even more acute than it was then. But as is the case in time of war, there is potential war profiteering in the impending energy crisis. This could develop, with the passing months, as the biggest ripoff in history. Prices have gone up drastically in the last few years. They're going to go up some more. That also is inevitable. But the question is, who will profit from these prices and to what degree? The package that was presented to the Congress in April is fair. It's well balanced. It assures that the American people are not robbed. It also ensures that the oil companies get enough incentive to ensure adequate exploration and production. But the oil companies apparently want it all. And we are talking about enormous amounts of money. Our proposal, if adopted, would give the oil companies, the producers themselves, the highest prices for oil in all the world. But still, they want more. If we deregulate natural gas prices, then the price will go to 15 times more than natural gas prices were before the oil embargo. These billions and billions of dollars are at stake. Whether that money should be given partially to the oil companies to encourage production and partially to the American people in a fair way, or whether it should all be grabbed by the oil companies at the expense of the American consumer. So I cannot overemphasize the importance of this question to the present and future security of our country, our independence, our economic structure, and also the fairness of a distribution of increased prices, which are inevitable. It's up to the Senate. I have confidence in the Senate. And I believe that we'll come out of this legislative session with reasonable policy established for our country. It's the most important domestic issue that we will face while I'm in office. And I attribute the highest possible importance to it in my own administration. And I hope that the American people will join in with me to encourage the Congress to act accordingly.
Certainly that's not entirely the fault of the oil lobbies. So shouldn't the administration and people in the Senate like Russell Long take some of the blame?
Yes, I take my share of the blame. I don't know how to define it. I think that Senator Russell Long is working long and hard to come up with an acceptable energy package. But I'm not trying to blame all the problem on the oil companies. Part of the blame falls on me, my predecessors, and the American people. We are simply wasting too much energy. For the same standard of living, we use twice as much energy as is used in Japan, West Germany, Sweden, and other countries of that kind. So we've got to cut down on our waste through conservation measures, voluntary action, and also a realization of the seriousness of this question. And I'm also concerned as Commander-in-Chief of our country about the serious security implications of becoming increasingly dependent upon foreign oil supplies, which may for some reason be interrupted. So I consider this to be a crucial issue, not just economically, not just who gets the gross profits, but also for our own nation's security.
You have a special meeting here today on the steel industry, and also you have a special task force working on the domestic steel problem. But what do you see offering on a more immediate basis to stop the loss of jobs in the U.S. steel industry, perhaps through some sort of voluntary quotas with other steel exporting countries?
Well, Steel imports are just one part of a fairly large number of problems that affect the United States steel industry, and which I might say affect the steel industry all over the world. I met with the Prime Minister of Luxembourg the other day, and he said the biggest single problem that I have is the low quantity of orders for my steel products and the relatively low price. The Luxembourg steel industry is in just as bad a shape. The rest of them are too. One of the things that have taken place already is a voluntary reduction in exports to our country by some of the other steel producers in West Germany and Japan. But that's an exceptionally artificial and simplistic approach to the problem of the steel industry. Our analysis has shown that reduction in imports would not materially increase the supplies or the demand for steel among our own American suppliers, that any benefit to them financially would probably come from greatly increased prices, which would have to be paid for by the American consumers. It's an extremely complicated question. The general overall world recession or slow growth means that you're just not building as many things all over the world that require steel. But my hope and expectation is to learn as much as I can personally about the steel industry, all of its problems, and then to propose to the Congress and to the steel industry itself, and to negotiate with perhaps with other countries that export steel to us, a resolution of these problems. It's long-standing, it's historic. The trends have been there, of course, long before I came in office. But this afternoon will be the first time I will meet with steel producers, steel laborers or workers, and the interested congressional members. I have a task force headed by Mr. Solomon in the Treasury Department, and he's working on a multi-departmental basis to give me specific recommendations for government action. This will be coming to me later on this month. So we are acting very rapidly on it to try to deal with a long-standing chronic problem that exists not only in our own country, but also in other countries around the world.
You touched on this just a moment ago, but I wonder if you'd elaborate. You talk about energy being a crucial issue, yet it does not seem to have caught on in the country as an issue. Do you have any views on why that is?
Well, you know, it caught on in the country in 1973 when our oil imports were reduced substantially, and there were waiting lines at the gas pumps, and the price rose quite rapidly. That was just the first warning sign of an inevitable shortage of oil and natural gas. It aroused the American consciousness this past winter when natural gas supplies were scarce and we had schools closed down, factories shut, transportation was interrupted. These are just the first warning signs. It's going to get worse instead of better. And I don't think there's any responsible international economist or analyst who doesn't agree with this fact. Now, there are several ways that it can be dealt with. One is to increase production, which we are trying to do on a worldwide basis. Another one is to cut down on consumption. Another one is to develop alternative or new kinds of energy supplies. But there's no doubt that the American people at this point simply do not recognize the seriousness of the present problem and the future problems because it doesn't touch them individually yet. But I don't want to see the American consciousness raised because of a devastating crisis that they have to experience. We're trying to prevent the crisis, not just react to one.
Mr. President, yes, sir? You are now focusing on energy, but some of your critics have been saying that you're doing too many things and all at the same time. What is your response to that?
Well, I think if anyone analyzes already what the Congress has done in response to my request and on their own initiative, and the major legislation that they have presently before them, they would see that we've made substantial progress. I doubt that anyone would want to eliminate a particular proposal that we have put forward, the establishment of the Department of Energy, reorganization of the executive branch of government, a reform to our very complicated and wasteful welfare system and so forth. I don't think we're dealing with too many issues. The fact is that these issues are difficult, they're controversial, they're complicated, and I think we're making fairly good progress. But in my mind, on domestic affairs, there's no doubt that the energy question is the most important.
Mr. President, I'd like to seek a clarification here.
Please.
I wonder if you could clarify the ethical standards of the administration. Is it now and has it been the...
Did you say ethical standards?
Yeah, there was a question asked about this at two press conferences ago. Is it now and has it been the position of the Carter administration that past or present illegal, unethical, and or improper conduct, as well as actual and potential conflicts of interest and the appearance of impropriety, will not be tolerated?
That's correct.
That being the case, in light of the fact that the California Fair Political Practices Commission has decided to charge a campaign committee of Robert H. Mendelson, the Assistant Secretary of the Interior for Policy, Budget, and Administration, designate, with illegal conduct, which you just said you would not tolerate, in connection with accepting a total of $16,500 in laundered campaign contributions. And by the way, the reports were signed by Mr. Mendelson and sort of a pro forma campaign treasurer who said that he really didn't know anything about the details, and Mr. Mendelson knew all about the finances, or indicated that. Why are you continuing to support the Mendelson nomination, especially in the wake of the trauma we've just been through on Watergate?
Well, I have to say I'm not familiar with that case. And I don't know if what you've described are just allegations or whether improprieties have been proven.
Report of the committee on...
But I'm sure that if any of those allegations are proven, that neither I nor the Secretary of Interior nor the Congressional Committee who will confirm his nomination will approve of it. Thank you very much.
That winds up President Carter's news conference. He sometimes stops to talk to reporters on the way. He looks like he may be doing that now.
Will is working long and hard.
Apparently not stopping to take any substantive questions today. In case you tuned in late today, the president opened with a statement that ran several minutes, repeating his assertion that dealing with the energy crisis is the moral equivalent of war, and saying there could be some war profiteering. He said the prices sought by the energy industry could develop into the biggest ripoff in history. He called his own energy program fair and well-balanced, one that gives the oil companies, he said, adequate incentive, but the oil companies, he said, apparently want it all. He said if we deregulate the price of natural gas, the price will be 15 times more than the prices before the oil embargo a few years ago. The president said there are billions of dollars at stake. The question is whether that money will be split between the consumers and the oil companies, or whether it will, in his words, all be grabbed by the oil companies. He said we import more oil than all the European countries combined, and that has serious national security implications. He praised the House, saying it's done a good job on energy legislation, and it's up now to the Senate, which has largely dismantled his program. He called energy the most important domestic issue we will face while he is in office. He denied undercutting a Senate filibuster against natural gas price deregulation. He said he is considering various administrative options if energy legislation from Capitol Hill is unacceptable, including a tax on imported oil and gasoline rationing. As to the Senate's inaction on his program, he said, I take my share of the blame. It would have helped, he said, if I'd had more meetings with members of the Senate. On other subjects, the president said today, tax reductions may come next year as part of an overall tax reform package. On the Panama Canal controversy, he said the language of the canal treaties is adequate, but he will meet tomorrow with Panamanian leader Omar Torrijos to make sure that the two of them agree on what the treaties mean, and they may issue a clarifying statement following that. In Washington, I'm Barry Serafin, CBS News. Good morning.